Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Howlin' Hoops podcast. It's Kyle and Tom as always, and boy, I never thought I'd actually say these words, but NC State men's basketball is headed to the Final Four. We're headed to the Final Four out in Phoenix, Arizona. This is something that, you know, you always dream about. You dream about as a fan to experience, at least to see kind of in your lifetime, of your team kind of making this March Madness tournament run and having a chance to play for a national championship. This year, finishing the year at 17-14, you couldn't have paid me almost any amount of money if you... and you said, hey, State's going to be in the Final Four this year. I thought I would think you were full of crap and full of malarkey and full of insert whatever word you want to put there. But this is something different, man. And I honestly don't even know really what to say at this point, other than wow.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told, like you said, if you would have told me this a month ago, I would have admitted you to a mental hospital. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. To go and beat a team like Marquette, and I mean, something was on our side that game. I mean, 4-for-31 from three for Marquette, and they were shooting about, I don't know, almost 50% from three going in their first two games for the tournament. Like, just the luck of the draw, I guess. I mean, we played good enough defense, you know, contesting shots and whatnot, but it's still... just didn't feel real that they were missing as many shots as they were missing.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that in the Texas Tech game too. Like, Texas Tech, I think, is a decent shooting team, but there were a few times, you know, where they would make like a good shot, but then there would also be times where they would be wide open on a three-pointer and you'd think, oh man, like, we're leaving them open on the perimeter again, and then they would miss a shot, and then you were like, okay, I guess we snuck away with that possession. And all of those kind of added up to the point where that game and the Marquette game are a lot in correlation with each other, where it's just like, you never thought that they were going to, I guess go cold in a sense. Not like, not go freezing cold, but go cold in a sense where, you know, they're not making the normal shots that they usually make. And, you know, every team is going to go through games like that. I mean, we kind of went through that in the first half against Duke. It almost looked like it took us a little while to kind of get going. We've had a lot of kind of fast starts recently where we've been able to kind of keep a lead. But that Duke game, it definitely felt like we got off to a slow start before we really, really kind of flipped the script and, you know, kind of put the pedal to the metal. But, you know, I feel like in that game we started off a little slow, but it also doesn't help for Marquette, though, that they only played seven guys. You know, we've got.
We only played seven.
Huh?
We only played seven.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, looking at the stat, now I'm looking at it, but, you know, they have technically Ernest Ross and Breon Pass as
part. Yeah, they came in at the end because...
yeah, played...
Mo was cramping because of the fasting, and then... he got horn out real late. I don't know, 30 seconds left.
Yeah. It's what's interesting, though, is that this year where we might only play seven guys, it doesn't feel like we play seven guys because of how many subs Keats makes. And it's, you really have to think about, like, oh, wait, no, he's just taking Burns out, back in, out, back in, out, back in, out, like, over and over again. But it's... dude, I mean, that Marquette game, after that Marquette game, I was sitting there just on the couch watching, like, all that unfold, and I'm like, how on earth Are we going to the Elite Eight? And that night I was, you know, I was watching that Duke Houston game, and I watched a little bit of that, but I was just, I had a feeling, I was like, oh, Houston's gonna probably, you know, figure a way to win this game. And I was like, and now we're gonna have to, you know, figure out a way to play against a very, very competitive and physical Houston team. And I wake up and I see Duke won, and immediately my mood was a lot better after seeing that, because I felt we had a little more of a chance, against Duke for sure. It's just I did not expect this, and I don't think anybody really did, because the way that we ended that season is not something to be proud of, and the fact that we have turned this upside down into something that basically feels like a fever dream at this point. We're doing everything we can to savor every single moment of this.
Yeah, I really debated on going to Phoenix, but the airplane tickets for the flights were almost like $1,200, $1,300, and I could have gotten a student ticket for $40. So like, yeah, I just really had to worry about the flight.
Man.
But you know, going back to this game, it's like we lose the turnover battle, we shoot 50% from the free throw line, and yet we still somehow, some way come out with a win. I mean, obviously the poor shooting, which I mentioned earlier, played a big part, but we also had a big margin on the glass and a pretty big margin in the assist category, in which I thought that, you know, Tyler Kolek, who averaged, you know, close to 8 assists a game, only had 3. Yeah, he had 17 points and 10 rebounds, but I mean, I felt like we did a good job on limiting, you know, the easy baskets and making them shoot. Which was good. I mean, I felt like we did a good job in the pick and roll, except for a couple of possessions. But I mean, for the most part, like, if you take away our turnovers, I felt like we played fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, limiting Kolek to only 3 assists is really, really what we were harping on. Is, you know, when he averages 8 assists a game, that's a minimum of 16 points accounted for. So if you're putting that into effect, you know, he really at minimum only contributed in that category on only 6 points. So it's a thing to really, I think Kevin Keats definitely harped on that, and he definitely made that a focal point in the game planning, where it was like, look, if he ends up scoring the basketball, you know, that's fine. But if he gets other teammates involved that are starting to, you know, that they can find their shot early and then, you know, really make it difficult for us to really find a way to come back, that was going to be probably more of an issue than if, you know, if Kolek ended up going off like with 25 points or something like that. And, you know, he still had 17, you know, so he was still a pretty big emphasis for Marquette's offense regardless. But the fact that Keats's game plan is, ever since the last game of the season, has been a head scratcher in a good way, because it's something that we've never really seen, and he's finally been able to get these guys to play together, you know, play with passion. I guess the passion's never, I guess, well, it's kind of wavered here and there throughout the season, but he's finally got everybody on the same page, and it's clearly shown as he's had great success in winning, not like what, 9 straight games or something? 9 straight games?
Yep, 9. And this game kind of showed something that I'm going to want to talk about later in the fact that Burns scoring the ball, he only took four shots, and yet we were still had or still won the game. We scored 67 points. We had three other guys in double figures. And yes, Burns had seven assists, but I feel like in the upcoming game against Purdue, Burns isn't going to have the same productivity in the shot making category. So we're going to have to find, well, other guys are going to have to find ways to score, and hopefully, Horn can continue this stretch from behind the arc, and guys like O'Connell can hit shots. Morsell can continue to hit shots. I mean, he had a really great game this against Marquette. And Jane Taylor didn't shoot the ball great, but both threes I remember just being humongous shots,
Yeah, it's something that was kind of you saw peaks of it during the season where DJ Burns might have not scored the ball as much in games, but he was able to find open shooters. The problem is throughout the season, nobody was really hitting anything besides DJ Horn. So now with Morsell kind of finding his has kind of found his shot better, Jaden Taylor playing contributing in the ways that he needs to contribute, hitting big threes here and there when we kind of need a bucket after we've gone on a drought, because you can't just resort to Burns being the guy to get you a bucket when you need it, when you need it most. It's like we finally found a way for anybody to kind of be that guy on the floor. And that's what we were, wanting in the beginning of the season. We showed signs of life in that category, but throughout the season, it just kind of was either one of the DJs, and then that was kind of it. And it's good to see other guys kind of stepping up to the challenge. And I mean, nobody has risen to the challenge more than Mr. Diarra. So that and that's a fact, and you can take that to the bank. I mean, the way he has improved over the course of the season has been it's been remarkable, I think. There's almost no good word to really describe his improvement throughout the season because it's so enormous and so it's so game changer like that people now have to resort to the fact that they can't let Mo Diarra get like go off now, which now almost even takes the spotlight. It did take the spotlight off of DJ Burns for probably a little bit until DJ has now risen to that level of I'm gonna get a bucket when I'm gonna get a bucket essentially.
Yeah, and some of what Mo does, like the rebounding, especially on the defensive glass. I mean, we talked about, Burns is, can sometimes struggle with rebounding the ball, and having a guy like Mo to, kind of get rid of that flaw in Burns's game, really impacts us. It limits possessions, it limits shot attempts, limits second chance points, And these are things that, I mean, we talked about every single episode. Like the Duke game at home that we played, where they had like 13 offensive rebounds in the first 10 minutes. Like, yeah, Marquette did end up with 10 offensive rebounds, but, we beat them on the defensive glass 34 to 25. We limited them chances to hit shots. I mean, they didn't hit the many shots, but just not allowing them to, get an offensive rebound or get two offensive rebounds in a possession and maybe find a rhythm offensively, like that is huge. It's huge. And
I mean, because you're teaching, if one guy, sparks that and shows the other teammates that they are putting in the work to make sure that they limit possessions by the opponent, that fuels a fire in everybody else. Because in the Duke game, in the Elite Eight, Our point guard, Michael O'Connell, was our leading rebounder with 11. So, you know, you and I have been, you know, not loving Michael O'Connell's rebounding, you know, throughout the season, but, you know, these last nine games, you know, he's been finding a way to feed off of, I think, Diarra's energy of, you know, just going after the ball and, you know, getting it on both offensive and defensive glass. It's just, you know, all the way down from literally the center all the way down to the point guard, you know, it's showing that other people are, they're willing to put in that work, to put in a little bit of extra effort to limit the opponent's possession, which enables us to continue our ability to essentially find ways to be effective on the offensive end, because it deflates the opponent when they're only getting one shot. And so they're like, well, now I got to work twice as hard on the defensive end because, you know, my confidence might not be there. Now you have a really hot DJ Horn and DJ Burns, and even Casey Morsell's finding ways to score the basketball efficiently now. Then you also have to worry about Mo Diarra. It's deflating to an opponent. And I think we've been able to successfully do that throughout the course of these last nine games. And it's been really something that I've enjoyed watching, because it seems like we're a whole new team these last nine games.
Yeah, and it comes down to the big fella, Burns, because, you know, we're stressing the defense by putting him in the predicament of, do we double or do we not double? You saw the double teams against Marquette, and he only had 4 points, but he had 7 assists. And, you know, some of them were not listed as assists or hockey assists, where it's like, oh, he skips the ball and leads to late rotation, another pass for an open shot, another pass for a drive, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing, because, like, you can have games like Marquette where, you know, his passing beats you, or you can have games like Duke where, you know, you leave him on an island and he will beat you one-on-one. He will beat 99% of post players one-on-one. And when he's, you know, shooting the ball like he has this postseason, like, I'll take him against anybody. And he showed it. I mean, 29 points on 13 or 19, that it does not get better than that.
Yeah. And like we've said all, like, throughout the course of the season, is, you know, will DJ Burns be efficient? And that's been a looming question over the course of the season. And I can say with full confidence that he has risen to that level of efficiency where he is a completely different player than he was at the beginning of the season. You know, he's showing, you know, America the player that he was last year when nobody could figure him out. And it's almost like, you know, you're playing these teams and they don't know how to figure him out. It literally feels like it's the reason why we had success last year was because nobody figured him out. And in this March Madness tournament, it's like nobody can really figure out a way to figure him out, you know, because he is skilled in so many different areas of the game, you know, for being his size, he's honestly a nightmare for a lot of people. I mean, you can see it like in Filipowski, you know, the fact that Filipowski wasn't able to effectively guard him made Filipowski's offensive production not great at 3 of 12 of shooting. So it was messing with him mentally. And then obviously he fouls out and everything. You know, he couldn't match up with Burns, and really nobody could on Duke. And it's shocking to me that Duke didn't have like almost another game plan to stop Burns, because, you know, you would think after the ACC tournament game, they would be like, okay, if we, you know, let's not resort back to what happened in that game. But then it looks like they made no adjustments when it came to playing us in the Elite Eight.
Well, when you look at it over the course of the three games we played Duke, the first game they didn't double him. He had what? I think 27. Hold on, let me find it real quick. Burns had 27 in the first game at home that we lost. Didn't double him. But we didn't have the guys contributing like we did in the other two games. Mo had 10. Horn had 8. Morsell had 9. That was it. And that's the biggest difference, is that when you don't double him, you have to hope that the other players aren't moving, aren't cutting. So it's just stagnant offense. And, we haven't been doing that. When even when we do dump it down to Burns, there's movement. There's, cutters. There's a bunch of other action alongside of just Burns going to work. And that's a big difference. And that's something that we're going to have to continue against Purdue, because I do not expect them to double Burns. And yeah, I mean, you would think that, Duke would figure out a way to, mix up your coverages against him. Because, in the middle of the season, we went through a lull where it felt like teams had figured him out. It was the Wake, the it was Wake, or no, when was it? It was Wake. At Wake, wasn't it? Yeah. At Wake, it was like Burns. I know he had 14, but he had 5 turnovers.
So like in the ACC, but we had other players that were, contributing in a big way.
Yeah. So I don't know. I felt like Duke needed to do a better job, adjusting. That was the one thing I was worried about going into the game. I was like, okay, we've already played them twice. We're playing them a third time. Yeah, we split, but they're gonna have something to stop in this game. And you talked up you kind of mentioned it earlier, where you said that, teams don't really know what to do because you don't have a ton of time to, go through film and really, analyze how to stop him. Which is why I thought, playing Duke would be a negative for us. And, playing Houston might not have been, because he's a tough player to stop on 2 days game plan, But yeah, I mean, what an insane game from Burns, and he deserves all the spotlight he's getting.
He does. I hope it hopefully it doesn't go to his head, but I mean, obviously he doesn't seem like the type of guy that would let that all go to his head. He seems very focused on what he's trying to accomplish. You can kind of see that all over the place. Even all those people wanted to meet him at Applebee's the other day. Like, he's embracing everybody's, love. He has been his, the whole time he's been at State. But he's never showed any sign of like letting up where he has gotten like complacent. I think he's still showing the sign of like, hey, like, I'll embrace all the love. Like I thrive on it, but I'm not gonna get complacent in letting myself be like, all right, well, it was a good run, let's just go, let's just, enjoy it or whatever. He is solely focused on one thing, and he's said it in interviews. He's like, I've been thinking about this since October, November when the season started. So, and you got and you love and you love to hear that, because for how smiley and how fun and light he is, he's still got that dog in him. You let the big dog eat, baby. Let the big dog eat.
Okay. You know, going into this matchup with Purdue, there's one very large worry that everybody in Wolfpack Nation is concerned about, and that is the 7-foot-4 beast, I guess, Zach Edey.
He almost doesn't even look human, dude.
Oh yeah, I mean,
Looks like a robot sometimes.
dude, the fact that he can dunk without like getting off the ground is insane.
Yeah, that's a little much. Like, calm down, Zach. You're not that cool.
And yeah, he's a big worry in on both ends because, you know, against guys that are against teams that, you know, really focus on their post players, you know, we've been lucky enough, like I'll give you an example of it with Duke, with Filipowski. You know, Burns didn't have to guard Filipowski. Burns was on Mark Mitchell most of the game. But we don't have the this matchup is not the same. Burns is going to have to be on Edie most of the night, and I'm just worried about foul trouble and all other sorts of things, because Diarra is going to have to be on Mason Gillis, who I would expect that he doesn't start, or he did not start in their last game against Tennessee, but I would expect he did end up playing 26 minutes to the 15 minutes from the initial starter, and I would expect Gillis to play more to kind of spread the floor and make Burns guard Edie or take Burns out of the game, just in general. And yeah, I mean they're just loaded with shooters. I mean they shot 20%, and I mean they shot 20% from three, but Edie had 40, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, they exploited, I guess, Tennessee, where they're just like, all right, well, obviously the three's not gonna work. We're gonna find a way to feed the big man the ball. And I mean, you know, we got Braden Smith, who is, you know, fourth in the league in assists a game. So, like, you know, in a matter of in 3 games, we have to play against the number one guard in assists per game, and then the fourth rated, I
I mean,
guess.
I could get assist to this dude. I could throw the ball into Edie and get an assist. I'm not super impressed with what he does, you know, assist wise, but you know, he's shown to be a very capable scorer, because you know, last year when Purdue lost in the tournament, they didn't have guys, you know, built around Edie that can score. And this year it's a whole different story. I mean, Lance Jones, Braden Smith, you know, our Fletcher Lawyer have all taken a big step up when it comes to efficiency, especially from behind the arc. So it just produces such a problem, on the defensive end for teams, just, you know, having to worry so much about Edie, but then you try and double him and you're leaving wide open shooters, or you try to, you know, even double him before he gets the ball, like over help, and it's just wide open three after wide open three. And yeah, I mean I'm curious to see what Keats has planned to combat him, because I honestly can't think of, you know, an easy way to cover him.
Yeah, no, and I really don't think there really isn't an easy way. Like, you just have to. Like, you almost just have to, if you're gonna want to get him in foul trouble. I mean, the guy doesn't commit fouls on the defensive end.
Well, because he
Granted,
doesn't have to jump.
he doesn't have to jump, and also some of the time, if he's really just not even going for the block. I was watching the Tennessee game. There was a couple times where the Tennessee players were able to kind of get to the basket, and Edie might have been out of position. And you know, if you're big like that, sometimes you'd be like, oh, I could probably go over and get that block. But Edie's like, he's kind of the guy where you see him and then you see the guy going into the lane. He kind of just, he might stand there a little bit, but he might, or he might like try to put a hand just to see if like it'll, I guess, disrupt the shot.
Yep.
But he's
Well, he's
really not.
realizing that he's so big that he doesn't have to, jump and swat at a ball to alter a shot. He can just stand there and just completely screw up. 'Cause I mean, you don't play a 7-foot-4 guy on a normal basis. The biggest guy we've played all year, off the top of my head, is either
Filipowski might be up there.
Filipowski or Quentin Post.
Quentin Post might be one of the biggest players we played against this year for sure.
And I've been seeing, stuff on Twitter where people are like, oh, our worst team in history, took them to the ropes, took Zach Edey and Purdue to the ropes. Edie 2 years ago is not the same as Edie right now.
No.
2 years ago, he was averaging four, I mean, he was averaging 14-8, which is good. But he is a two-time Naismith Player of the Year. Like, it's a different breed right now.
The kid's no slouch. He's really just been able to develop his game. And I know it's all over, social media, and how people are, analyzing his game, and they're saying, he's the most boring player to watch in college basketball. And where, there might be some truth to that, but the fact is that he's been able to develop his game and know what works best for him. And they're able to, and credit to Matt Painter as well, being able to find ways to actually utilize him to be the guy. You can be 7-4, but you might take five. But you could be like sometimes how DJ Burns is, where you run up and down the court a couple times and then you're tired. Where,
That's the biggest thing for him. That's where he took
yeah,
the biggest
it's his
jump.
endurance. His endurance is what really sets him apart from all these other players, because he's able to play, so many minutes a game. And so it's something that, you obviously you look at all these big players sometimes and you're like, all right, well, how's that guy's endurance? Or, that guy can only play X amount of minutes per, like, per possession or whatever. And you're just like, this guy doesn't come out of the game, and he's always going to be out there. I mean, I think he played all 40 minutes or whatever against
39,
39. So it's like,
38, 39 in the past 2 games.
yeah. So, and now he's getting, a full week of rest. So he's going to be, I think, filled with, he's definitely going to be well conditioned. And
Oh, yeah. I mean,
really what's it really what it's really, I'm gonna, it's really just what sets him apart from all these other bigs, because of how he is able to utilize his conditioning to his advantage by constantly being in the game and never really coming out and never letting really the opponent get on a little bit of a run because he's out of the game. And I think that's what Purdue's been able to do so well this year as well.
yeah, and like you were mentioning about his conditioning, his minutes from his sophomore year to his junior year jumped up 12 minutes per game. And the efficiencies didn't drop. So just being on the court more allowed him to have these type of stats. So he was, even that year that I mentioned him averaging 14-7, he shot 65% from the field. And only 65% free throw line, which has improved over the past 2 years. Just being available allowed him to become what he is now. And
We'll see. I mean, if we can somehow get him in foul trouble, that'd be great, but I don't see it happening. He hasn't had more than four fouls since February the 15th, and he has not fouled out once this year. So,
It's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough. I mean, if we can try to get our guys to find ways to drive to the lane, create a little bit of contact, force Edie to kind of make a mental mistake and maybe contest a shot, get a foul call here and there, it could really change the way the game, turns out to be. And I'm really just hoping for a well I'm just hoping for a well-refed game where it doesn't feel like it's in favor of one way or the other. I want it to be, a clean game, because as soon as the refs start to get a little bit out of control and start calling these iffy fouls that it kind of can kind of both go both ways, it's going to be tough. So, that's really what I'm hoping for, is just a very well-refereed game, because I think at this stage, I feel like the ref sometimes wants to be, the hero, when you just kind of have to sit back and let the boys play, essentially. Let the boys play. Let them go out and compete. I mean, this is the Final Four. They're not here by accident. So don't try to favor it one way or the other, essentially.
I actually think the biggest thing when talking about Edie is, like, if we can keep him off the line, I'll feel better. But it's when he's, I mean, against Tennessee, he shot 22 free throws. There's been a lot of games this year where State as a whole has not shot 22 free throws. So that's going to be a big key. And then one more big key is going to be DJ Horn. We like to run a lot of pick and rolls on offense, but Edie's not the type of guy to come up and contest and hedge the screens. He's going to be in drop coverage. So there's going to be a lot of our favorite shot, the long twos, that are going to be open, and guys are going to have to hit them. Horn's going to have to hit them. Taylor's going to have to hit them. Marcel's going to have to hit them. O'Connell's going to have to hit them if we want to have a chance.
But I'm looking forward to a good game. It should be a lot of fun. Do you have any picks for maybe the UConn Alabama game? I mean, obviously UConn looks freaking unstoppable. I mean, this team looks so unstoppable. It's unbelievable. Like, I mean, they honestly, in my humble opinion, they will most likely be the back-to-back national champions. And it's been the first times in 17 years that that's happened. I mean,
I mean, they have it all. They're starting five, two projected top 10 picks. And when you talk about, we just talked about Edie for probably 20 minutes. Donovan Clingan, if they, if for some bad scenario where we do end up losing, in the Final Four, which is a crazy statement to even talk about to begin with. If we do end up losing and it's Purdue against UConn, which because I expect UConn to win in a landslide, like 15 to 20 points. The Klingon is probably the one guy in the country that can guard Edie one-on-one and limit him to a mediocre 15 and 11.
Crazy to say that
Yeah.
too.
Where 15 and 11 is a mediocre game for somebody. But yeah, I mean, Cam Spencer, elite shooter, elite playmaker, great on-ball defender, Tristan Newton, the engine for that team. And then you got Stephon Castle, who is an incredible freshman. Like, they have dogs all over the court, all over the court. And their offense, just watching it, is a thing of beauty.
Oh, yeah.
The sets, some of the sets that
Hurley runs. It's things we haven't seen, and I would expect like in the coming years to see a ton of it. Absolutely a ton of it.
Yeah, I mean, UConn's a different. They're almost like in a league of their own, like how Alabama football was for, I feel like, all those years.
Oh, yeah.
They're in a league of their own, and they basically just recruit men amongst boys, essentially, what it feels like because of how dominant they are. But
Whoa,
hey, they
they
did
hit in the
have
portal.
losses.
Wait, what did you say? Sorry.
They did have three losses on the year, so
Yeah.
they can be beat. It's just been a minute that they've been beat. So,
Yeah. I mean, other than, I mean, they've done a good job recruiting, obviously, because of Klingon and Castle, but Newton's an ECU transfer. Cam Spencer is a Rutgers transfer, but before that was Loyola, I want to say. Yeah, Loyola, Maryland. So, it just, whatever they're doing in the portal, finding these. Well, success helps with some of it, but hitting on every single one of the transfers they get is insane. So,
Yeah, and I
maybe
think
some of the
that's
success we ha are having is going to lead to, some big time guys coming in.
yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I think that all boils down to, obviously coaching, but it'll be interesting to see kind of where state kind of goes from here. But before we get out of here, I have to mention this. What happened to your boys in blue, your Creighton
Oh,
boys?
dude.
What happened? What happened
I.
last podcast? Come on, man. I had to bring it up.
Yeah, I mean, we went and watched Tennessee play. Like, they didn't look the part. I don't know. I was really high on them. I mean, they're a really, really, really good team. They just couldn't figure out how to stop Dalton Connect. I mean, it was Dalton Connect and Ziegler again hitting threes. That dude gives me nightmares.
He really does, because what gives me even more nightmares is to see Tennessee go like really this far and go all the way to the Elite Eight in the tournament, and seeing Dalton Knecht go off for like high
37.
30s in points, and it brings me back to that literally the game where
We shut him down.
we shut him down and he had
Oh,
points. That feels like a fever dream where we literally held one of the nation's best scorers to 2 points and we still lost.
yeah, because Zakai Ziegler couldn't miss.
Yeah, well, screw that guy, dude. We don't like we don't we screw Zakai Ziegler forever. We don't like him. But oh man, well, it should be interesting. NC State plays in the early game in the early slate on Saturday, first of the two Final Four games. Hopefully, I don't want to put any prediction on it, but I really just hope it's a well competitive. I just really hope it's a competitive game. At this point, I'm just trying to savor in the moment, Tom. I'm sure you are trying to just savor in the moment, but it's this is insane. I mean, I think we're just really trying to take one game at a time, and this is just an exaggerated level of that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, my prediction for the game. I won't say it out loud, but you know my prediction.
I won't say mine either, but I'll text it to you right before tip off.
Oh, man.
Well, guys, thanks again. This has been another edition of the Howlin' Hoops podcast. We really cannot believe that State has made it this far, and we will be hooting and hollering all the way. And tip off is at 6:09 p.m. on TBS, and we look forward to watching the Wolfpack continue this Cinderella story. for lack of better words. It's been quite a ride, and we're very excited to see kind of what happens. And we thank you guys for all the support. We do appreciate it. Continue to follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and we really do appreciate all the support. It means a lot to us. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It means a lot to us, and Tom and I are very appreciative. So with that being said, go Wolfpack, baby.
Go Pack.